a very well-known and often cited medrash, and it has become even more relevant in our day and our context, and it speaks to some of the changing opinions of our interaction with Rabbanim and Talmidei Chachamim. The beginning of Vayikra has Moshe Rabbeinu outside of the Ohel Moed, because that's where he ended Sefer Shemos. The Shekhinah had descended upon the Mishkan, but Moshe couldn't enter Ki Shechan Olav Hanan, despite the fact that the Shekhinah was present. Ki means despite, and because of the fact, because when HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shekhinah suffuses the Mishkan, human beings have to maintain their distance as a display of Yirat Shamayim. So Moshe is standing outside of the Mishkan, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu calls him, and that's why the Sefer gets its name. It's a strange word, Vayikra. Normally, Vayidaber Hashem El Moshe Lemor, and that spine or that structure appears in the first pasuk of Vayikra, but it's preceded or prefixed by Vayikra El Moshe. Hashem calls Moshe, Vayidaber Hashem Elav Me'ol Moed Lemor. So essentially, Chazal and Rashi quotes this. A lot of Rashi's on this first pasuk, but one of the interpretations is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu beckons Moshe, Vayikra El Moshe, and then only after being beckoned or invited does Moshe enter the Ohel Moed to receive a communication from and of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So certainly in the context of Parshas Pekudei, this is meaningful and appropriate, because in Pekudei, especially that first moment that the Shekhinah descended, there was a need to demonstrate the distance that human beings must maintain even when the Shekhinah descends. And unfortunately, Nadav and Avihu didn't fully incorporate this message or this behavior. But Chazal see this as a general sense of distance and proximity with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and humans' attempt to establish that balance. So essentially, Moshe theologically is trying to modulate his behavior. However, the Medrash in Medrash Rabbah takes us to a slightly different place or slightly different perspective. The Medrash believes that this speaks not to Moshe's attempt to calibrate theology, but to what we would call menschlichkeit, what we would call derech eretz, not to enter until you've been called, not to speak until you've been spoken to, just basic laws of civility or norms of interaction and politeness and decorum, unfortunately many of which have somehow become less compelling in the modern world. Certainly in recent memory where politics has become very rabid and hostile and contentious, and some of that has trickled down into our general dialogue and conversation, but it's not just something that's being fed by politics, it's something that's being fed by a culture of anger and a culture of immediacy and a culture of demand rather than civility and discipline. And Moshe Rabbeinu, independent of the theology, this is now Hashem's Mishkan. And what's so fascinating is that he has the ability to, as we say, switch on a dime, because for months this had been his Mishkan and this had been his house. And he had been involved in the day-to-day construction and supervision of Bezalel. And for these 8 days, Moshe Rabbeinu will be constructing and deconstructing the Mishkan. It's not clear when this pasuk occurs. Does it occur on the first day? Does it occur on the eighth day? It probably sounds like it occurs on the first day. So Moshe hasn't really begun the 8 days of practice and construction and deconstruction. But certainly, if we ignore the 8-day inauguration cycle, Moshe had been very comfortable in this area, and he had every reason to assert his proprietary ownership of this area, but he shows the type of civility and menschlichkeit of Derech Eretz. And this is obviously something totally, totally different, but in my own experience, I remember this type of switch very clearly when I built my house in Alon Shvut. This is in 1999. It was pre-the second Intifada. And the Palestinians, who were primarily involved not just in constructing my house, but in constructing the entire project, they essentially took this hilltop that had been a forest and brought it gradually from a wild, untamed area into what would be called a mini city, including streets and infrastructure. And essentially, the Arabs were involved with Jewish supervisors, but not necessarily Jewish guards, because this was before the Intifada. So the supervisors of the project were Jewish and Israelis. But everyone from the workers all the way up to the vice supervisors were Arabs. And for 2-3 years, as I was building my house, this was their home. They would come freely and walk freely, and essentially they built this community. And then at some point, when people started to move in, the early people, I was one of the early people to move in, so the municipality put up a gate and put up a guard at the gate. And at this point, a day later, the Arabs who entered had to show their documents and IDs, and had to go through a check. And I understood why it happened, but it was so odd that a day before that, and for years before, this had been their home, and they'd walked freely, and now they had to realize and adapt that now certain measures of safety and security, which, of course, in retrospect, weren't even near the types of safety and security that we apply now, but certain measures of supervision were necessary. And Moshe had to exhibit that same type of discretion and ability, not just to demonstrate derech eretz and menschlichkeit, but to pause before entering a place that he essentially had built and had walked freely through for so many months or weeks. Now, this is the content of the Medrash. The phraseology of the Medrash is fascinating, provocative, and a bit graphic. The phraseology of the Medrash is, Kol Talmud Chacham, She'in Bo Das, or In Bo Dea, if a Talmud Chacham doesn't have Das, Nevela Tova Himenu, a dead carcass is better. Now, there are two parts of this phraseology. One is, of course, the definition of Das. And although for us, very often, we define Das as knowledge or wisdom, something intellectual, the context of this Medrash would appear to suggest that it's not intellectual or cognitive experiences, but just, as I said before, as the Rambam would describe Das. When the Rambam describes Midos, he titles the section Hilchos Deos. So it's not intellectual knowledge or wisdom, but tact, diplomacy, sensitivity, social cues, respect, dignity, civility, simply menschlichkeit or derech eretz. But what's very intriguing is the second part of this statement, nevela tova himenu. Obviously, it's set for shock value, because since it's a Talmud Chacham, you would expect to give that person a pass and maybe round out the entire personality of such a Talmud Chacham. So what that he's brutish and rude and insensitive and monstrous? And so to balance that or to equalize that, the Medrash has to say something very, very derogatory. But the choice of Nevela is also very intriguing, and presumably Chazal chose Nevela with some degree of precision. This obviously isn't the first time this Medrash has been discussed. It's a very popular, because it's so provocative and so hair-raising. Nevela is a carcass that tends to smell and rot, and you keep your distance, you're able to detect and identify and distance yourself before immediate encounter and physical contact. And perhaps the Talmud Chacham doesn't afford that ability, because you're duped into assuming integrity and virtue and kindness, and you associate yourself and study from that person and, so to speak, get close as opposed to the Nevela, and then you're shocked to then discover that his erudition isn't mirrored by kindness and compassion and sensitivity. So Nevela is better, because at least you have a warning and you can distance yourself before that immediate encounter. So this read would suggest that the concept Nevela Tova Himenu means that a Nevela at least gives you some degree of coping that a Talmud Chacham without Menschlichkeit does not. A slightly different strategy would be not to see the contrast between a Talmud Chacham Shein Bodea and a Nevela, but to see the similarities. And I think the similarities may surround the loss of potential and opportunity. A Nevela is not just something which is usher or foul smelling naturally, but it represents a loss. Had this animal been properly sacrificed and shechted, it could have led to privilege and opportunity and prosperity. And either nature beat us to it and killed the animal, natural causes, or human intervention was insufficient and the shechita was a failed shechita, thereby yielding an avela. But either way, there's failed or missed opportunity. There's something here that could have advanced the human condition and didn't. And I think that's part of what Chazal is trying to convey, that unfortunately this Talmud Chacham will not contribute all the potential that he possessed that could have benefited our society and our Torah society, because unfortunately his Torah is associated by moral rot or by personal insensitivity. And what I alluded to in the beginning is that this reminds us that, first of all, people are not infallible, they're not invulnerable, they're not immaculate, and people are people, and sometimes those people would hope that immersion in the world of Torah would lead to a refinement of personality and a dignity and ennobling, and unfortunately we don't always see that. And on the one hand, we can't be too harshly judgmental. We sometimes have to understand people are people. We've seen very often in the last couple of years, Tamidei Chachamim, Rabbanim, who have fallen from their perch, who have been guilty of very, very terrible, terrible crimes both against HaKadosh Baruch Hu and crimes that have been real human victims. And God forbid, we shouldn't in any way excuse the behavior simply because it was authored by a person of scholarship and Torah education. But on the other hand, for some people, this leads to a religious crisis and a disillusion with Torah and its leaders. And sometimes we have to remind ourselves that people have demons and people are frail. And just because a person enters the world of Torah doesn't necessarily guarantee that they'll escape their demons. And in general, sometimes you have people that are demons that contribute and produce very important good for humanity. It doesn't mean that when we discover they're demons or that we should give them a pass or in any way not excoriate or condemn the behavior. And we should certainly try to uncover whatever potential abuses may be happening, but on the part of whoever may be perpetrating them. But it can't lead to the type of crisis in the religion. And these are people that are not necessarily reflective of religion at its best. They're people who try and unfortunately fail. And sometimes it's worse than people who have demons. Sometimes it's people who are really, the profile of people who have demons is just people that are patently good people and kind people, and they've got an area in which they fail. And that area leads them to some very negative and possibly abusive behavior, exploitative behavior. Sometimes you have people, even Tamina Chachamim, who are just very, very inappropriate people, or just it's at their core, they're just not pleasant or kind people and considerate people. And it's not just a person has demons, let's say a Rav got caught in a corruption scandal or sexual scandal, but by and large the rest of their life seems to be a life of probity and integrity. Sometimes it's people who consistently display the type of behavior which suggests lack of conscience, lack of moral boundary. It also reminds us, in a world in which we stake the infallibility of Talmid Chachamim, and certainly in more of a Haredi world, in response to the crumbling of rabbinic authority, and I think sometimes people that aren't in the Haredi world are too quick to take pot shots and to be dismissive of Das Torah. And then when we look sometimes in the world that we inhabit, we could use a little bit more respect for Talmidei Chachamim and respect for Masara. So it's a question of finding that balance and that modulation between the two. But certainly the road of Das Torah is paved with presumptions about the omniscience of Rabbanim and Talmidei Chachamim, and it's not true in terms of knowledge. And something as devastating as the Holocaust reminds us that we can't blindly trust Talmidei Chachamim, as great as their stature, when they operate and offer opinions outside of the purview of pure halacha or even moral behavior. I mean, something as amoral as historical assessment and whether the Holocaust should have encouraged a move from Europe earlier. I think we learned that lesson the hard way. Many of us who believe that the state of Israel is a part of a redemptive event and a redemptive process feel similarly, that a lot of Rabbanim and great Talmidei Chachamim, for various reasons, in part because of the context in which Zionism emerged, were and continue to be unable to see that. And I think both standards that I spoke about before are true. This shouldn't in any way diminish our respect and admiration for Talmidei Chachamim. But it should also not in any way dampen or thwart our ability to see these events as Yad Hashem. And that's with regard to Talmid Chacham's ability to accurately read history and sense prophecy, which certainly is harder and more sophisticated and complex and challenging. But even when it comes to basic civility and interaction and tact and diplomacy, we have to be able to process when Talmid Chacham don't demonstrate that. I think for many of us living in this generation, I think hearing some of the manners in which Rabbi Avadji Yosef, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, spoke about secular Jews, about non-Jews, about very sensitive issues, and things that he said, and not just what was said in his name, but things that he said, and we actually have recordings and videos that were very derogatory and very inappropriate about comparing Gentiles to reptiles and non-firm Jews, in just ways that we weren't expecting Menachem to speak. And I would no way, shape, or form apply this statement in the Medrash Chalila B'chas to Rav Avadji Yosef. I think in his case, it was probably just, in part, not fully assessing social realities and living a bit in insulation and not realizing that these statements were said in Erev Shabbos Shir in the context of quoting Chazal, the people who appreciate Chazal and can round out Chazal and understand that Chazal was speaking in one context and applied differently in our context, that those statements are being recorded, would be played live to people who don't understand Gemara and Chazal, and those statements were taken in their naked form, are very hostile and very antagonistic. So part of sometimes social cues is not just, I'm sure on a day-to-day basis, I never met him, never had the privilege, but a lot of, I'm sure people who had the privilege, when he talked to people on a daily basis, he didn't convey the sense of the Talmid Chacham without Menschlichkeit, Chas V'Shalom, in the way that the Medrash is referring to Talmid Chacham, that just don't show Derech Eretz and consideration of others and sensitivity and sacrifice. Here was just not understanding that messages delivered in one context would be grossly misunderstood and painful and hurtful in another context, but to a degree that's part of Derech Eretz, being able to understand where you live and who's listening. But certainly I wanted to apply the extremity of Chazal's statement to something like that. So it's a very important statement. It's a statement that sometimes is passed around and asserted with too much nonchalance and too much aggressiveness without the subtle thought and complex assessment, which I hope this shiur tries to begin to address. But it's a statement that has many, many levels of relevance and importance.